I'll start with questions.
Thanks very much. My name is Owen O'Brien. I'm a Sinn Féin TD from Dublin Midwest, and also a former Belfast City Councillor. I'm just up the road from here. But I've recently published a book around many of the issues that are in the documentary about the need for greater investment in public health.
I'm Kieran Mackell. I'm an architect in private practice in Belfast, and I teach part-time at Ulster University in the Department of Architecture.
Hi, my name's Elfie. I work for PPR on the Build Homes Now campaign, which is a campaign that started over 7 years ago and is led by homeless people in Belfast and people who have previously been affected by homelessness, and their children and their teenagers. And I'll pass it. I'm Jenna, and I also work.
I'm Agostina Martin. I'm a lecturer in architecture at Queen's, and I have a specific interest in streets, and especially a fair city for people. So I'm going to be chairing today. We're going to have about 20-minute conversation. So I would like to first ask Elfie, because the last thing we saw was your little film, how do you think that the stories told in that film relate to the narrative of the bigger narrative of the financialization of housing, and whether that has any impact in the way that you think housing and developers are working in Belfast right now?
Okay. First of all, I just realized that a lot of people who are actually in that film at the end are in the room, who are members of the Build Homes Now campaign and others. So I just want to give a shout out to Sipo, who's here, who's Son Bongeni did an amazing piece in that, and then Shauna is over here, and Ema, and Kiva, and her mum Geraldine, who've been on the campaign for 5 years or something, and Jenna, and I know her mum is somewhere out here as well, and hopefully I haven't forgotten. one of the things Leigh Lanning was saying was that she doesn't want to overuse the word crisis. A few weeks ago, the statistics came out for how many children are statutorily homeless in Northern Ireland, and it's over 15,000. So I'm not going to be worried about overusing that word. It definitely is a crisis. And I mean, there's over 30,000 children on the waiting list. That 15,000 is only the ones who are full duty applicants, as a housing executive will call it. And I think it's a crisis that has a really simple solution. And I think there's people in this room who have lived through that crisis for years on end. I would also tell you there's a very simple solution. We need to build homes, we need to build them now, and we need to build them in areas of high need, in areas where people want to live, where their families are and their connection is. And I think there's a few things that are blocking the building of those homes. I think that one of them is political manipulation, religious inequality in housing, and another is a profit-driven agenda in the council and the housing executive and the DFC, which sees dollar signs in multi-storey car parks and student accommodation and fancy flats at Sirocco or wherever they're going to be, and sees only problems with social housing. And I think we really need to combat that head-on. And one of the things Leigh Lanning talks in the film about vacant houses, I think that's a huge issue in Belfast, but the families who've been on the campaign for the last 10 years have gone around their communities and have mapped out huge plots of vacant land across the city where housing could be built. And some of those plots of vacant land are in areas of are publicly owned. So, for example, you have the Mackey site in West Belfast, which is owned by the DFC, is a 25-acre vacant site, and it's in the highest area of need in the whole country. So you've, in a 1 mile radius, about 5 homeless hostels, some of them family homeless hostels. And you've Hillview in North Belfast, you've Sirocco in East South Belfast, you know, with the overflowing communities and the markets and the Short Strand can be used to house them. And I think, and one of the things, sorry, maybe I'm not being very joined up in my analysis, but Leigh Lanning talks about pension funds in the film. And before I was in PPR, the campaign, the families, they enlisted the help of a economist Paul Gosling, wasn't it, Desi? I think. And he actually found out where some of the money could come from to build proper social housing in Belfast, and pension funds was one of those places. So wouldn't it be great if instead pension funds were being used to invest in public housing and not in those private equity firms? And it's not a utopia. I mean, there's cities all across Europe where large numbers of people are living in public housing. In Vienna, for example, 65% of people. So I completely, there's people in the room who could speak from personal experience better, but I can see everything that Leilani speaks about, maybe in different ways and different degrees in Belfast, and I think it's really sad, and I think it's really scary, and I think there are concrete ways that people who have power in the city and the planning department and in the council and politicians and the DFC, the House Executive, could change that tomorrow if they wanted. And that's what me and the families want to see.
Owen, can I then ask you, why do you think, what's stopping governments, and in this case, Department for Communities or Housing Executive or in Dublin, the different authorities that are in charge of this, what is stopping them from encouraging investment and investing themselves in social and public housing?
There isn't a single answer to the question. I suppose the first thing is you've had a trend over 30 years where financialisation didn't happen just by accident. It's not like it's a force of nature that companies like Blackstone just arrived. Successive governments in different jurisdictions changed the laws to allow that kind of investment to take place. And at the same time, they also reduced taxes on corporations or high earners in a way that reduced the amount of capital the state had itself to invest. So you ended up in a situation where, pretty much before the crisis, we had the lowest levels of investment in public housing, whether here in the north, in the south, in Britain or elsewhere. But the profits to be made from investment funds investing in real estate were higher than they've ever been before. The one thing I'd say is today the real issue isn't what's stopping them from doing it, but how do we get them to change the mindset that they have? That's the really important thing. And I think if you look back at Irish history, what is it that changes politicians and people in power in terms of getting them to do things differently in housing policy? And what changes it is mass mobilisation. In the book that I wrote, I spent a lot of time actually asking the question, when did things change in the past before? So whether you go back to the end of the 19th century in the Land League, whether you look at the movement of trade unions and workers in urban cities, in Derry and Belfast, in Dublin, Limerick and Cork in the early part of the 20th century, whether you look at the civil rights movement in the 60s, it was only when people at the most acute end of the housing crisis mobilised, built alliances with progressive politicians, with good journalists, with good academics, that forced the kind of change. And we're now in a situation, it's one of the things that Philip doesn't touch on a lot, but there's a lot of it happening where you're beginning to see mobilisations emerge. We have a campaign down in the south at the minute, which is trying to become a big statewide campaign called Raise the Roof, all of which is about saying the only way we're going to meet people's housing need, whether it's social housing or affordable housing, is massive shift in the political priorities and levels of investment to provide the housing that people need, and at the same time to start reintroducing a lot of the restrictions on private finance investment in private real estate that existed pre the 1980s and actually worked pretty well for most of that period from the Second World War to now. So, I spend a lot of time criticising the housing minister in the South. He keeps telling us that this is the only way we can get investment in, but a little bit like PPR, we've identified either alternative sources of borrowing, alternative sources of investment, alternative sources of land. Our problem now is political will, and I think the only way we're going to shift that significantly is ever greater levels of mobilisation, whether at local community level, statewide level, or a little bit like the UN Special Rapporteur at global level.
Well, I can comment a bit on that because of co-running the Safe City campaign, and it's quite daunting to see how difficult it is to get that message across, and it many times doesn't matter how many thousands of people recruited to put that voice out and get that message across. it's incredibly difficult to get government to really listen. It seems to be a very, very slow process. And maybe you can tell us a bit more of how do activism platforms do to really get that message across?
The first thing is to realize that there have been successes, right? And we, because those of us that are campaigners, we spend a lot of time in campaigns that don't seem to win, and therefore people get demotivated and kind of drift away. But for example, we've recently had a very significant success in Dublin City. So the government announced this proposal where they wanted to have what they call Pathfinder projects. So they'd identified very big tracts of public land in Dublin City and County. And their idea was, rather than public investment to deliver public housing to meet social and affordable need, they were going to enter into these very complex joint venture partnerships with private consortia and investment funds. The consequence would have been about 70% of the housing would have been sold at open market prices, and the remainder of the housing would be social and affordable. One of those was in an inner city area called St. Michael's Estate in Dublin City Centre, which would have been a prime location for some of the gentrification that you've seen in the show in other European cities. So a coalition formed, first of all, grassroots from within the community, the Family Resource Centre, and residents in the existing area. They started to build alliances with politicians from a range of parties, with journalists, with economists, academics. And collectively we organised this very, very significant campaign to push first the City Council and then the government, who ultimately financing it, to take that project out of this complex kind of financial arrangement and to fully fund it publicly through a loan from the European Investment Bank. We were successful in that, and that project was announced just about a year ago, so it's going to be the first fully 100% publicly funded, publicly delivered housing on a scale that we haven't seen in about 20 years in the South. Now, we have three more that are still in the private venture. We lost the vote on one in my own local authority area in South Dublin County Council, and we're now fighting the other two. So I think what we need to do is look at those moments where we have successes, but also, for example, learn from each other. So again, Raise the Roof, while it's a 26 county campaign, it's headed up by the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, which is all Ireland, and it's learning from the experience of the likes of Marriage Equality or Together for Yes. So I think where we have those kinds of successes, we need to then be sharing those and see how can improvements be made. Barcelona, for example, has made huge strides against short-term letting and Airbnb, and you heard some of that there. We're now following some of that again through some progressive legislation that opposition have forced through the South. So it's where we get those victories, share them, celebrate them, and realise you can do it. But it is often slow and difficult work, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't keep doing it.
Thank you very much, Owen. I have a question for Kieran about something that wasn't mentioned enough, I think, in the documentary, because it was focusing very much on the financial side of it. It's the physical side of housing and the issue of density and how density is understood in different parts of the world. So many of these cities would have had a completely different type of density and of social housing with different types of densities too. And if you look at the Grenfell Tower, it's a very different thing than housing in Sweden. So I would like to ask you, Kieran, probably will agree on types of density that could be suitable for new housing in Northern Ireland.
It's a big question, I suppose, in a way, because I think we have had a fairly impoverished understanding of homes and housing for a long period of time. So for most of us, certainly in this city, housing has either been two-storey, three-storey, possibly with your own roof over your own head, or has been a slab block or a tower block that was generally poorly maintained and poorly built and not very well managed. So are there other examples elsewhere that could look at as better practice? Probably. And I think both Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth have looked at a model which is broadly the London and Dublin Georgian house model as a way to say if you could build about five stories with people, families living above other families in a way that you could share garden space or street space or yard space together potentially. And you might in doing that build a sustainable community or contribute towards a sustainable community. And I think that's probably true at one level. The problem is we don't really talk about it enough, because for us I think housing here has been about land and about ownership of land, perceptions of land and territory, and that's been the difficulty, which is why I think there hasn't been very much progress. Because I do think Owen's entirely right about the mobilisation issue. The other problem I think is we need to find a way to challenge civic and political leadership to actually be leaders. So the end of the film talked about cities coming together with best practice examples how you begin to do things in Barcelona has done it, and done it for a long period of time. So. But if you take this city, well, we've got an alleged Belfast agenda and a local development plan that says we want to build homes for 66,000 more people inside the next 13 or 14 years. And virtually nothing has been done about that in any part of the city, anywhere. So how do we raise the challenge to do that? And the challenge is partly about mobilisation, is partly about continuing to demand for homes and build homes now, and it is also about pressing on policy and making sure that the policy is actually understood and challenged. Because if you take the policy in this city, which says the homes that have been built are in part for new people coming in to work in a new employment sector, and that those people coming in will most likely be middle class people who want to live in the city, which is why there's been a clamour of some sort for private rented sector. And private rented sector is generally two bedroom accommodation and not for families. So if you look at any part of the city, whether it's Sirocco or Mackey's site or any other part of the city, including in the city centre, and including areas where the city council is allegedly getting leadership, like Inner Northwest Belfast. So Inner Northwest Belfast is 16 acres, the same size as Temple Bar in Dublin, a bit more than Sirocco site and a bit bigger than some other sites in the city. That site, if it's to actually accommodate anything towards the 66,000 people, should be providing homes for 2,500 or 3,000 people. There are currently 300 families in that area, or thereabouts. So how do we do that? And the very first application in the planning system is for offices, not for homes, not for mixed use. So there is something fundamentally wrong that we don't actually see the policy creeping up behind us and find a way to challenge it as strongly as possible and find something like that. And the council, city council, owns a huge swathe of land in the city. So if they can give leadership, they can begin to say, we can pilot study homes in this place and do it. You don't need to buy the bloody site. Just give the site free. Council can own it for more if they want, but you can build homes. And we can find a way to do that. At a couple, last point, just had a conversation a year and a half or so ago with Glenda Davies over in San Diego. And Glenda was talking about if there's an intention to build space for about 1,500 public employees in the civil service, effectively, in that part of the city centre, then there should be accommodation for 1,500 people. And how do you do that? And we still haven't raised that question yet, actually, at all.
Well, hopefully the new organisation of the planning committee and city council being more diverse, having a couple of green councillors and having some other councillors signing up to a greener agenda, which actually advocates not only for climate sustainability but also for social sustainability, and that should be hopefully one of the things that will be put as a higher priority in the agenda of council. But I would like to ask you, Della, I would like to ask you what would the message that you would like to give to councillors that have or any sort of government that has something to say or decisions to make about this, what would be your message to you?
Yes, the campaign in general is transfer awareness of how bad of an issue this is at the minute. I mean, I don't know many statistics or big words. All I can say is from personal experience that it's widespread. It's tearing people apart. I mean, for me personally, I was left homeless, sofa surfing. I knew a lot of people who were doing the same thing, and there was no. It's not like you could just go to a hostel. You can't go to a hostel because there's a lot of drugs, and that's just going to bring you into a worse situation. So what's the point? You stay in the streets, you're in closed doors. But it's not just me. It's not just a couple hundred. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of people my age and younger, or families that are stuck in a position where they don't have a house. They can't get a house because they don't have enough points. There's four categories that you have to fit into to get points or get a house, and if you don't fit into that, tough luck, you don't have a house, do you know what I mean? So it's, I think the message we're just trying to spread is, build homes now, that is it, it's simple.
And this is, do you want to make talk? So we did an exercise with some young people who were affected, this Mackey's, who were affected by homelessness, and we said to them, okay, so the current plan, they've currently
funding from Peace 4, but the plans haven't come ahead for the Bathy site, but they completely exclude housing in the highest area of need in a public human site. And we did an exercise, me and Jenna and some of the other people here in this room, about the kind of things that we would like to see on Bathy site. I don't know if you want to kind of read out.
All right, so there's both here. There is multicultural centres, youth centres, 24-hour drop-in centres for mental health, because I think that's definitely important nowadays. Cycleways, because being eco-friendly is obviously important. Local businesses. Definitely homes. lots of homes. Basically, just a tight knit community, because I feel like that would be great for us.
And I know, Owen, obviously you're a Sinn Féin TD, and hopefully you have some say in the pie. I'm sure you do. And we have actually been we've been speaking to Sinn Féin MLAs and MPs in the area, and we've been asking for their support for social housing on Matthews. And currently, we're being told that they're liaison with stakeholders, or and we know that they've been involved with consultations on Matthews. And on behalf of the Building South Community and the people here, we'd really like Sinn Féin to come out publicly and support social housing on Matthews for the families and the children who live around there.
It's surprising how similar those principles and questions are to the things that we got advocate for in the Safe Secure campaign for a different type of part of the city, where actually homes is one of the things, amongst others, like local shops and culture and spaces for people to be able to live their lives. I would like to ask you, Jenna, again, would you live in the city centre?
If it was more like this, then yeah, definitely. But at the minute, no.
Because I think there's two types of spaces that could be very easily developed into housing. And one of them are all these amazing amount of empty spaces around the city. But the spaces of the inner northwest, they have as much vacancy as that space, and they can accommodate as many people as that space. So I think it's also important to kind of try to challenge the idea of the semi-detached or terrace and start thinking of ways of living that you would probably be very comfortable living in if you had all the services that you need to live in the part of the city that you want to be living in. So, and I think it might take a very long time, but it's the message that some of us are trying to get across, especially to councillors, that there are different ways of doing this. And hopefully both types of developments can happen.
The other thing I was thinking, which is crucially important, I think, is that the challenge is obviously tonight's conversation is about home and housing. But the other part of that conversation is about salary and wages and income. And because with all the issues about density in the world, it doesn't solve the issue or problem of people not having sufficient salary and wages. And the whole neoliberal agenda has been about driving down salaries. And the financialisation is entirely about that. Your move regularisation, you drive down salaries, and then people feel that they take whatever's given to them. And that's not acceptable in any of these schemes. So we need to find a way to look at these things that we're not about either or, we're about both and, or find some way to do as many campaigns as possible at the same time.
There's also a need for us to fully understand how we can deliver projects like this. So first of all, I'm more than happy to talk to Carol and the team and argue the point with them. One of the things, there's a debate going on in the South at the moment where for a very long time what we argued for is we wanted more social housing. And of course, what we started to realise is what we need is more public housing. So when people talk about Vienna, in fact, the majority of people who live in public housing in Vienna wouldn't be eligible for social housing here because their incomes might not be very high, but they'd be certainly above the income thresholds for eligibility for social housing. But what's also important about social housing is subsidised. So the rents that we paid, and I lived in Artillery House for 9 years and was a housing executive tenant, the rent I paid didn't cover the economic cost of maintaining that unit. But what they do in Vienna, for example, or they used to do in certain parts of Sweden, is if you developed, whether it's a standard suburban site in Mackies or the kind of mid-rise, high-density developments in the urban city centre you're talking about, you'd allow a slightly broader range of people that live in those areas. Your social housing tenants would still be on subsidised rents. People then on middle and slightly higher incomes would be on what they called affordable cost rents, where they're paying the economic cost. So there's no profit, there's no speculative gain. But the joint income from all of those tenants not only allowed you to pay for the day-to-day maintenance, but ensure the long-term sustainability of development. And I think one of the things we have to start talking about, and I say this as somebody who's been a campaigner for social housing for years, is broaden our idea of what we want the state to do. So, for example, I've long argued we need the housing executive to be given the permission to borrow, to have large-scale investment in either these kinds of developments or the kind of developments that you're having. Like, I live in the city centre in Dublin tomorrow. If I could be guaranteed an affordable rent in a good quality, mixed-use, mid-rise development. Some people don't want that, they want out in the suburbs, but I think you can do both. But it's about those of us that are campaigning, understanding how do you fund this, what's the best way to do it, and then going in and actually convincing people that our way of doing it is actually more economically and socially and environmentally sustainable. And I think if we start to get those arguments out, you start to then make large developments possible. Like the St. Michael's Estate, what I mentioned earlier, that's 575 homes, plus a library which will be publicly owned, plus a plaza, plus some retail to have some economic opportunities. We're arguing at the moment that it could be financed in a way that your social housing tenants will pay 15% of their net disposable income, but the affordable rental tenants there would pay somewhere between 700 and 900 euros a month. At the moment, the market rate in that part of Dublin is 2,200 euros a month. So you can already see the gap. And in fact, the only way you can deliver affordability is that if it's not the market, if it's not private finance, if it's public housing on public land, and people only pay either the economic cost or a subsidised income in proportion to their disposable income. And that works in Vienna, it works in parts of Germany, etc. You can see some of the mayors there are starting to talk about that more and more. I think that's the model we need to be promoting to deliver these kinds of sites.
I believe that part of the lack of interest in this type of thing in council and in the planning committee might be because also of lack of knowledge of other models or lack of familiarity with other models. And maybe something to do would be to have a chat with them at some stage of this alternative ways of...
One thing I would say is, and look, I'm represented in New Lodge, so I was elected in the council, and I lived right on the edge because all of those houses that are now where the barracks were didn't exist at that stage. We lived in the city centre, but we didn't think we were in the city centre. And as an elected politician, I would never have thought about arguing for housing, for example, in the Cathedral Quarter, or because the constituents I represented wanted housing, you know, back up on the Antrim Road or back up on Cliftonville Road. I do think there's a challenge for progressive politicians who represent communities at the perimeter of the city to actually start realising those bits of the city centre belong to our communities and we need to try and find a way of integrating them. That means meeting each other halfway. So if you have a collective of people who are campaigning, for example, around the Cathedral Quarter, and if you have community organisations and councillors campaigning for more social housing, you know, on the other side of that boundary, you have to find a way of speaking to each other and building a common campaign. So you could have a Cathedral Quarter with really good quality residential accommodation for social affordable need as well.
Just an anecdote of this, my students were doing work in North Belfast this year, and one of the stories that they heard was that somebody that lived in New Lodge was saying, they're telling us that they want 66,000 people living in the city, we live in the city. Like they were saying, we live in the city. So obviously the perception of it is not as black and white as it might seem. So I'd like to take one question from the audience, if anybody's interested. Is there any one thing? Sorry. Yes.
Hi. I'm Martina McCauley, I'm Research Officer of Housing Rights, and I did my PhD research on debt and neoliberalism. So I was glad to hear, Kieran, you mentioned the word neoliberalism, because I think this encompasses what we're trying to get at. I think it's like the Voldemort of ideologies. It's never named, but I think we need to name it because it's what lies behind the financialization of housing. And I think that we need to kind of tackle that. We need to name it to be able to get at it. I think when you're talking about social housing, the increase in social housing, the demand is there, obviously. We can see it in terms of the growth of the private rented sector, that we now have families being housed in the private rented shown how inadequate that is in terms of providing the ability for people to be housed in the private rented sector. And I think it's interesting just in that documentary when they're talking about Blackstone, we have this kind of idea that these foreign companies or big equity companies will come in, sweep in, buy up lots of properties and rent them at affordable rents. And this is what I really want to ask about, is about affordability. I think here your point is key there, and that affordability is two sides. It's about income and it's about how much we pay. But I think we need to, how do we tackle that aspect, that idea of affordability in the context of this financialization of the whole sector?
There's one thing I think we're not too sure what cities or countries have done this very well. I'm not too very familiar with this issue, but I've read some stuff recently about the notion of safe value tax, because we were talking briefly earlier on our way in about how certainly our politicians here locally now within the planning committees have more power and influence than they've ever had, and with growing confidence and growing political strength and political realisation, I suppose, you can begin to flex that political muscle in a way which could hopefully change both policy and point towards fiscal policy, because the councillors all represent all of us, give permissions for planning permissions for application sites on sites like Mackey's or somewhere else. So what they're doing is confirm a value on some sites that in some cases have very little financial value. So is there a way to charge a site value on that by charging the owner of that land a tax beyond what they may expect to pay in the current system? Because at the minute, the allegation is that they're the people taking all the risk, but in fact they're taking no risk whatsoever. The people taking the risk are all of us and all the rest of our citizens. The thing will be done properly and for all of our benefits. So I'm kind of curious, in a way, is there a way we could either learn more about that notion of safe value tax and bring it to bear in a way to change the character of how we may begin to build and develop in this city?
It's also important that we start to define what we mean by affordability. So one of the problems here, and this comes from the model across the water, is affordability is somehow linked to a percentage of market rent. Right? So it's 80% or what they call sub-market rent. Affordability has nothing to do with what the market will charge. It has to do with the income that you have. So increasingly what's been said in the South by kind of progressive housing policy campaigners is for very low-income families, affordability is about 10 or 15% of their net disposable income. As you then move up into kind of what we call middle income brackets, it's kind of 25 to 35% of your net disposable income. So the question then is, well, who can provide that? Right? Who is able to provide housing at that cost? Well, if you follow the logic of the programme, if investors are investing to push up asset prices, push up land prices, they're always going to be looking for higher yields and higher rents. We've seen some of the new developments that have recently been bought out by the likes of Blackstone. They're now looking at €3,500 a month for a relatively modest sized 2.5, 2-bedroom apartment in the centre of Dublin. Right? You need an income of over €120,000 a year to be able to pay that. So who can deliver that? Well, in the first instance, only the not-for-profit sector. So whether it's local authorities, the housing executive, approved housing bodies, community land trusts. And what we have to find a way of is mobilising public land with public or low-interest finance from like the European Investment Bank to deliver the kinds of housing that people need. And what that would then mean is, if I'm renting, I could start off as a social renter, I could start off as somebody unemployed or on a very low income, and I'm paying 10 or 15% of my net disposable income. But over the course of my life cycle, I might start to do better for myself, increase my education, increase my income. It's okay, I could move into a 25 or 35% of my net disposable income. But then when I hit pension age and my income drops down, my rent would fall down again. So the way we need to structure these things is the rent you pay follows your income. But overall, in a housing development, the rents that all of the different people pay over a 40-year period cover the full cost. And like they do it in other cities. The other thing I'd say is this, and I wanted to come back to what Kieran made. There was a period in British public housing where they built the best quality public housing, right, on exactly the kind of model we're talking about. So Camden, for example, in the 70s, particularly in and around the 70s, when Sidney Cook was the chief architect, and you had some incredible architects, they built public housing, which is world-renowned to be the best quality public housing inside and outside. And people are still living there in good quality council housing and affordable rents. And they were doing it by producing housing developments of 400 or 500 units, mid-rise, high density, with schools, with creches, with economic opportunities. So they could do it in London in the 70s. Even the housing executive here, if you look at the record in the 70s and 80s, significant investments in public housing. That's the only way we're going to tackle the affordability crisis, in my view.
Just one more point. When I was thinking about Blackstone, and obviously they're making a hell of a lot of money for people living in dire situations, and one thing that we've been thinking about recently in the campaign is who's benefiting from the homelessness crisis and who's making a lot of money, because as I said in the film, someone has to be. And you know, we're working with Syrian families across the city who've come in through the Vulnerable Person Resettlement Scheme. Each is subsidised by the UK government, and they are, the majority of them are being housed in private landlord accommodation. A lot of them in a lot of those houses are managed by a property management firm called Homecare, and a lot of them are living in dire situations. I mean, houses so damp that are making their children sick, and rodents, and people having shifts to do homework and stuff like that. And I mean, I wonder about the private landlords, about the property management companies, about who's making a lot of money. I mean, 25% of our two major political parties are landlords. So whose interest is it in, you know? And I think that's something we need to tackle a lot when we talk about Blackstone, and when we think about it in the context here, in the context in Belfast. A lot of people are making money out of people living in misery.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone wants to support us or join us, you're more than welcome. I can't really see the audience right now.
So how can that be done? How can everybody support you?
So we're based at BPR, which is Prescendibus, right?
Yeah.
It's Prescendibus.
Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook, Twitter. We have Instagram, which is just Build Homes Now. If you follow us, message us, we will definitely get back to you straight away, because the more the merrier, really, to fight this issue.
And we're planning to bring out our own master plan for Mackies, led by children, young people who are affected by homelessness across the city. And we want to submit that to council as our plan, in opposition to whatever plan may come ahead there. So we'll be looking for a lot of support when that comes, and I know we might be able to get some help from some architecture students and people who might want to support us. So yeah, we're going to be crying out for help in the next year. So thanks.
I think we can.